Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Quidjar, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've got a lot to get through in this hour. We'll be looking back at last night's Europa League action as both Manchester United and Arsenal won. Unfortunately for Wolves, their first group stage game ended in defeat at Molineux. Also an emotional night at Ibrox, and Shea Ojo gave Rangers the win over Feyenoord, and Celtic earned a 1-1 draw away at Rennes. So we'll be looking back at last night's Europa League action. Also looking ahead to the Premier League action this weekend. It gets underway tonight, the weekend of Premier League football, down on the south coast. Southampton take on Bournemouth at St Mary's Stadium. So we'll be giving our predictions. Producer Laurie will be hoping to do a little bit better than he did last week. A big fat zero for his predictions last week. We'll also be focusing on Brighton, Leicester and Everton this afternoon. So any fans of those clubs, make sure you get in contact with us here at Love Sport. And then between 2 and 3, we'll be switching our attention into the Championship. We'll be talking about Cardiff City. Their next game is at home against Middlesbrough tomorrow afternoon. Also talking all things QPR, a huge game at the Den tomorrow as QPR travel to Millwall. And also talking about Reading, who are at home against Blackburn this weekend. We're also going to keep you updated on the Rugby World Cup. The first game is officially underway in Yokohama, and the host Japan, things are going pretty swimmingly for them. They've just scored a try. They are 20 points to 7 up against Russia, just short of the 50-minute mark. So it looks like the hosts will get underway. It was a shaky start, a nervy start inside the opening 5 or 10 minutes. Japan conceding an early try against Russia, but they do seem to have settled, and it looks like they will go to an opening day win. We'll also be looking ahead to the huge, huge game. I mean, tomorrow's action is full of excitement. Australia beat Fiji, France beat Argentina, which is in England's group, and then arguably one of these two sides from this game will probably go on to win the competition. South Africa versus New Zealand. South Africa are my favourites to win the World Cup. So it's a huge, huge contest in the first group stage game of that group. But also looking ahead to England's game on Sunday against Tonga, they've announced their side. So we'll be discussing Eddie Jones's moves in that game, and also Ireland's take on Scotland on Sunday as well. They've both announced their teams today. Wales have to wait until Monday to get their campaign underway against Georgia. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to look back a little bit at last night's Europa League action. Three English clubs and two Scottish clubs in action last night. For Manchester United, it was a home game at Old Trafford against Astana from Kazakhstan, and not exactly the greatest game of football. I think that's how you would sum it up. Manchester United made plenty of changes. A number of youngsters getting a go. Axel Tuanzebe at centre-back. Angel Gomez in midfield. But the youngster that did catch the eye of a number of people was Mason Greenwood. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the Manchester United manager, has been talking up the talent that Mason Greenwood possesses and how he's one of the most exciting prospects he's seen at that age at Manchester United. And he scored for Manchester United in that 1-0 win, the only goal of the game. The youngest scorer broke Marcus Rashford's record, actually, in the same competition. So a big moment for Mason Greenwood, his home club, his dream club to play for, and he scores his first competitive goal for the club last night. So a big moment for him and Manchester United, even though it wasn't in particularly glamorous circumstances and not exactly the best performance, they do get their Europa League campaign off and running with a win. For Arsenal, a really, really good result for them. This looked on paper arguably their most challenging game on paper in this year's competition, or in the group stages of this year's competition. Eintracht Frankfurt away, and a very, very convincing performance by Arsenal. They won by 3-0 as Frankfurt were down to 10 men for the latter stages. Joe Willock, who's played in a number of Premier League games so far this season, he got the scoreboard up and running. Bukayo Saka, who has received a lot of praise for his performances last night, got 2 assists and got a goal, and was a really well taken goal from outside the box, curled it into the far corner. Our Frankfurt goalkeeper Kevin Trapp had no chance of saving that. So that was Arsenal 2, Frankfurt 0. And then Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's made a great start to his Premier League campaign, continuing where he left off from last season. He scored in the 87th minute to make it Eintracht Frankfurt 0, Arsenal 3. So a great way for Arsenal to get their campaign up and running. But for the third English side in action last night, not exactly the way that they'd have hoped to started their Europa League campaign. Wolves were at home at Molineux against Sporting Braga, and it did not end in great fashion for them. They lost by 1-0. Obviously, they've gone through a numerous qualifiers to get to this point. We talked to Nick Masheter yesterday about how much it means to Wolves fans to be involved. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they were under Paul Lambert in the Championship and right near the bottom of that table. And now they're playing Europa League football. And I don't think Wolves fans are getting too down, but obviously they're winless in the Premier League so far. They're down in 19th place, and they start off their group with a disappointing defeat to Sporting Braga. Looking at some of the other games in the Europa League, two Scottish sides in action. Celtic drew 1-1 away at Rennes. That seems like a good result for Celtic. It looked like a tricky task for the Scots to go to France and pick up anything from that game, but they did pick up a point. And on an emotional night at Ibrox, in memory of their late captain Fernando Rixon, who died of motor neurone disease, a long battle he's had with the terrible disease. He died on Wednesday, but a great tribute to him. And Liverpool Lodi Shea Ojo struck from outside the box to give Rangers all 3 points on an emotional evening at Ibrox, a fitting tribute to their former captain Fernando Rixon, who unfortunately lost his long battle against motor neurone disease on Wednesday. So that was the Europa League action from last night reviewed. We're going to now look ahead to the Premier League action, which gets underway tonight on the South Coast at St Mary's, where Southampton host Bournemouth. So we're going to go through all the games. Producer Laurie has joined me in the studio to do it. I'm not going to mention how you got 0 points last week in your predictions, how I lead 25-13 it is now in the predictions. So let's look ahead.
Your scores are going suspiciously through the roof. I know I got zero, but
I've got evidence of this.
Okay,
I can show you if you want the evidence. I can show you.
You just care more than me.
Okay, there we go. I care more than Laurie. Yes, I do. You are right there. Anyway, let's move on. Let's start off with the game tonight. We're going to go through all 10 fixtures this weekend, which culminates obviously in the big game of the weekend, Chelsea versus Liverpool Stamford Bridge on Sunday. But first, on the South Coast at St Mary's, Southampton v Bournemouth. This is a game that has ended in a draw numerous times over the last few years. High-scoring draws as well. Will Ralph Hasenhüttl's men get 3 points, or can Eddie Howell's men get the win?
I like the look of Bournemouth, I'm not going to lie. I mean, beating Everton can never really be telling of any team, because Everton is so inconsistent, and however good they look, they can always disappoint you. Having said that, I think Bournemouth might have a little bit more than Southampton this time, so I'm going to go for 2-1 Bournemouth.
You're going to go 2-1 Bournemouth. I'm actually going to stick with what the common result has been actually over the last few years. As I said, a point has been shared on numerous occasions. I think 4 of the last 5 games have ended in a draw, so I'm going to go Southampton 2, Bournemouth 2.
See,
it's three all.
It's that kind of research. This is why you're 25-13.
It was a quick look at BBC Sport to see the head-to-heads, and there you go. I make an informed decision. It was 3-3 at St Mary's last season, so I'm going to go to Southampton 2, Bournemouth 2. Then on to the Saturday, and the first game, 12:30 kickoff, looks like a really intriguing one. Leicester against Tottenham at the King Power. Obviously, Tottenham having to come back from Greece in midweek where they threw away a 2-goal lead. Interesting comments by Brendan Rodgers. I'm sure we'll get the views of Jamie Thorpe from First Four LCFC, his views on Rodgers' comments about James Maddison to come. I think this is a game that Tottenham will slip up in, and I think Leicester will take all 3 points. Maybe they were a bit cocky going to Manchester United last weekend, thinking they were going to turn up and get a good result, and they were punished for that. I think they will get all 3 points this weekend. I think Vardy, Maddison will cause Tottenham problems. I think they'll struggle to deal with the fact they're playing Wednesday night and then Saturday lunchtime. I'm going to go Leicester 2, Tottenham 1.
I think this is one of the most difficult ones of the weekend to call, but I somewhat disagree with you. I think Leicester, as much as people are saying they could be the best of the rest of the season, they could get into the top six, etc. I think against certain teams, they come across as slightly one-dimensional, and if their plan is not working, Iheanacho's not been in good enough form to kind of change their dynamics up front. Ayoze Perez, obviously, moving into Vardy's position is not the same player at all. So I actually think that the reason why, you know, they're a little bit inconsistent is because they don't necessarily have that sort of plan B. So I actually think Spurs might win this, though it's really not with confidence, but I'm going to say 2-0 Spurs.
You're going to go 2-0 Spurs. I think, to be fair to Leicester, Tottenham's star might suit them. They might be able to play on the counter-attack against one of the top six sides. To Turf Moor then, where Burnley host Norwich, who'll be pretty delighted after their win against Manchester City last weekend. Are Norwich going to continue that run, or are Burnley going to be able to win at home?
I don't know. I mean, Burnley in my mind are just always terrible, however well they do. So I'm going to say 3-0 Norwich, but
3-0 Norwich.
That's just on form.
There you go. You heard it here first. I'm going to... Well, this makes it interesting because I'm going completely the opposite way. I'm going to go Burnley 2, Norwich 0. I think Norwich's start of play could lead to some trouble this weekend. And Burnley at home, yeah. Turf Moor, Sean Dyche... Usually they do a good job against sides like Norwich. I remember the first weekend of the season against Southampton, people were thinking, oh, could Southampton go there and get something? And, well, all they took was a 3-0 drubbing back home. On to the next one. We're going to have to quickly go through these. So Everton versus Sheffield United, which is at Goodison Park. Laurie, what's your prediction?
As I've said, you can never rely on Everton for anything, but I'm going to say they'll sneak it 1-0.
1-0, well... I'm going to echo your thoughts. I think it'll be a pretty drab game. Everton will get a winner. So Everton 1, Sheffield United 0. I'll also go with, up to the Etihad, Manchester City versus Watford, another 3 o'clock kickoff. I think this is going to be one-way traffic. It's not going to be great for Kike Sanchez Flores. I see Watford scoring, but Manchester City scoring an awful lot more. 5-1 Manchester City.
I'm going to say 4-1. I also think Watford will score first, and they'll be all the... And it's from one casualty to another, you know, all the... commentators will be going crazy about it, saying that Pep Guardiola's in free fall, and then they'll win 4-1.
Yeah, sack Pep Guardiola. Is he good enough to be Manchester City manager? 5:30 kickoff at your beloved St James's Park. No, not down in Exeter. It's up at Newcastle. Newcastle v Brighton. What are you going to go with?
There's only one St James's Park.
No,
here.
Yeah, you're right. That's down in Exeter. Yeah,
I think it's going to be 1-0
to Newcastle. 1-0 to Brighton.
To Newcastle, it's home. You say the home score first, don't you?
To be fair, I am going to go with a similar result. Newcastle 2, Brighton 1. Then on to the Sunday kickoffs. 2 o'clock at Selhurst Park, Crystal Palace v Wolves. What are you going to go for?
I don't know. It's really hard to see kind of... Wolves have had a combination of relatively tough fixtures, and the Europa League, is it an issue or not for them in terms of league form? I think... they'll probably win, though. I'm going to say 2-1 Wolves.
2-1 Wolves. I think it's going to be another of these drab affairs at Selhurst Park. But I think Wolves playing Thursday night, Palace, I'm going to go 1-0 winners against Wolves. Then to the London Stadium, West Ham versus Manchester United. I think United have got a bit of an injury crisis at the moment, and also having to play Thursday night, then Sunday. I'm going to go West Ham 2, Manchester United 1. What are you going to go for, Laurie?
I'm going to go for 2-2 and potentially a comeback with Mason Greenwood scoring a couple of goals.
Mason Greenwood, a couple of goals there. I'm sure fancy football owners will be wondering whether to start Mason Greenwood this week. On to the penultimate game, the Emirates Arsenal v Aston Villa. What are you going to go for?
I think, I don't know, these, again, Arsenal, never rely on them, but 2-0 Arsenal.
You're going to go 2-0 Arsenal. I'm going to go 3-1. I can't see Arsenal keeping a clean sheet, but I think they'll win comfortably. And then the big game of the weekend, Stamford Bridge. Both sides having lost in Champions League action this week. 4:30 kickoff, Chelsea v Liverpool.
I think Liverpool are a lot more vulnerable at the back than people give them credit for. I think Chelsea could win this, and I'm going to say that it actually might be 3-1.
Nope, you are mistaken. Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2.
Is that the correct result that you know will happen?
That is what's going to happen.
That is a confident. I've got one more for you, Kieran, just quickly.
Yep.
It's the Milan derby this weekend.
Ooh. Who's the official home team?
AC Milan.
It's AC Milan. I'm going to go Inter Milan, though. 2-1.
Okay, I'm going to go the other way around. I'm going to say, even though Inter are 3 wins out of 3, top form, AC Milan are coming back into form. It's a derby, you never know. I think it's going to be 2-1 AC Milan.
Oh, there you go. We're going to add that one to the 11th game. It's not the 11th Premier League game, but our 11th predictor. Thank you very much for joining me, Laurie, going through our predictions. I do lead that, actually, by 25 points to 13. But anyway, I won't keep reminding people of that. I'll just keep reminding Laurie every single day until he catches me up. Anyway, up next, we'll be looking at the South Coast, not at tonight's game, but looking at a game away at Newcastle tomorrow and talking all things Brighton. Love Sport. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. As I mentioned a few moments ago, we're going to be turning our attention to all things Brighton and to look ahead to their game away at Newcastle this weekend and review last weekend's 1-1 draw against Burnley at home. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Andy Naylor, Brighton reporter for The Athletic. Good afternoon, Andy. Let's look back at last weekend's game first. A 1-1 draw at home against Burnley, still without a home win yet in the Premier League this season. Is that something that will be weighing heavy, obviously not this weekend, but for the next few home games, will be weighing heavy on Graham Potter's mind?
I think it is a bit of a concern, Kieran. It actually stretches back to March. Brighton have not won at the Amex in the Premier League since March. The thing about the three games so far under Graham Potter, the performances in all three have been encouraging. They should have beaten West Ham. They drew with for half an hour against Southampton. They looked the better side on the front foot until Andoni got sent off, and they end up losing that game. And against Burnley, again, after not a great first 20 minutes, Graham tinkered with the system. They were in the better side, get themselves a goal, to all intents and purposes, looked like they've won the game, and Hendrick in injury time, sweet strike, they've ended up drawing. So suddenly, from West Ham, Southampton, Burnley at home, you've ended up with 2 points from three games, which quite conceivably could have been 7 or maybe even 9, the way the games have gone. So, yeah, I think that is a concern, in that the results need to start matching the performances.
I wanted to get your views, Andy, on a few of the players. Firstly, Pascal Gross, who kind of has been a bit in and out and had a bit of a difficult last 6 months. He was one of the star players for Brighton last weekend. Yeah. Why do you think we have seen a bit of indifferent form from him? And going forward under Graham Potter, do you believe he's going to be quite a key man in this team?
Well, the interesting thing with Pascal is, of course, in his debut season, not much was known about him. Came from Ingolstadt for £3 million, was really influential in that first season, goals and assists. He was hampered somewhat last season. He had a couple of quite bad injuries, which kept him out for a long time. Again, Graham's got in the squad now. There's quite a lot of options. He changes the way they play, the style, quite a bit. I think Pascal is in that mix in terms of, you know, being able to influence things. The one thing, you know, with Pascal that he hasn't got is pace, but he has got a good brain, a good footballing brain. He can pick a pass. You know, he thrived most in the sort of 10 role, playing behind Glenn Murray in that first season. He's got, for example, Leandro Trossard injured at the moment, Belgium summer signing, who's looked really impressive and creative. if you like, for, as sort of competition for a creative spark. So it'll be interesting to see how it sort of develops with Pascal. I don't see him being sort of maybe as regular as perhaps he was in that first season, but that applies to a number of players in the squad just because Graham tends to mix things up a lot.
Looking at the team that started against Burnley, what really interested me was the fact that both Glenn Murray and Neil Maupay started. Now, Maupay had a great season for Brentford last year. He scored a couple of goals since his move to Brighton. Were you surprised to see both of them start up top? And do you think going forward that we might see more of this where both Maupay and Murray start together?
Not surprised, because I actually my piece, post-match piece for the Monday on The Athletic, was about how things are changing slightly for Glenn Murray. We saw this for the first time at Bristol Rovers in the Carabao Cup, where he played in a kind of withdrawn role just off the left, a sort of number 10, if you like. And that is actually where he started the game against Burnley. He moved eventually into his more recognised role and number 9. But again, with those forward players, we've seen Maupay play through the middle. We've seen him play left. We've seen him play right. So you've got this very kind of a real contrast in the previous two managers. Very flexible approach from Graham Potter. Changes the team from game to game, changes the personnel within games. We saw that a lot against Burnley. Solly March, just off the top of my head, I think in 5 games has played in 5 different positions. He's played right back, he's played right wing, he's played left back, left wing. Even ended up sort of in the hole a bit against Burnley. So I think we'll see that kind of flexibility. You know, we're not going to see a sort of, it's either one or the other necessarily.
One thing, obviously, that we've seen a lot of from Brighton this season is a back three. On the weekend, it was Duffy, Duncan, Webster, obviously, who was signed over the summer from Bristol City. How do you think Brighton have adjusted to that new system? And do you think that Graham Potter will persist with it, even if results don't necessarily start to pick up?
I think that will depend on how games are going. We saw a good example of that against Burnley, because actually what happened was he started with the three and it became a four. You've also got in that mix Dan Byrne, who's 6'7", been a bit of a revelation, really, sort of playing, operating as either a left-sided central defender in that three or left wing-back. And, I mean, he was the one sort of getting forward quite a lot under the original system that they started with against Burnley. So I don't think, again, that will be set in stone as a system. I just don't see it working that way with Graham. It will be very much a case of what he thinks is best from game to game. And like I say, even this willingness in games. There were multiple changes against Burnley, both of the system and players within that system.
Looking ahead then, Andy, to tomorrow's game. It's away at Newcastle, 5:30. Before we look at maybe team news and whether there might be any changes, is this a game where we're going to learn a huge amount about both sides? Newcastle have never won a top-flight match against Brighton. Do you think this is a game where Graham Potter will be identifying as we need to kind of make a statement that the 3 points is paramount, or will he be looking at it and thinking, actually, away at Newcastle, if Brighton can take a point back, actually, that will not be a bad point at all?
Well, he talked a lot in his press conference yesterday about, you know, about it being a difficult game, about St James's Park being a difficult place to go. I think the interesting dynamic of this fixture is here we are, 5 games in, and it shouldn't feel as important as the game does feel. And part of the reason I say that is that I know it's very early on, but you look at the table, you look at the results of the respective teams so far, and the games they've got coming up afterwards. After Newcastle, Brighton go to Chelsea, and then they're at home to Spurs before the next international break. I'm not saying they won't get results in those games, but if you look at their overall record against the top 6 clubs, the likelihood is that they'll struggle in those games. Newcastle's next two, after Brighton, are Leicester away and Man United at home. So I think this game is quite significant in terms of where these teams might be once we get into 8-10 games into the season.
Focusing on team selection then for tomorrow's game, a number of players out injured, sidelined at the moment. Leandro Trossard, who did make a solid start in his first few games. Ezequiel Schelotto, Jose Izquierdo, Leon Balogun and Johan Bakhsh. This must be a growing concern with the number of injuries. Do you think that Graham Potter will be looking to make many changes tomorrow from the team that drew against Burnley?
I'm not sure that it's... obviously, in an ideal world, you want everyone available, but at least four of those players that you've mentioned would probably not be involved anyway and haven't really been involved that much so far under Graham. Bernardo, who is a bit of a different case because he actually started at Man City and he's picked up this injury which ruled him out against Burnley. Trossard is a while away yet. So I don't see there being that many changes in terms of actual players, but who knows what system or what plan Graham is going to come up with. It's very hard to sort of guess that ahead of the game. We saw it against Burnley last week. You looked at the team sheet and I don't think anybody saw actually the way they were going to start in terms of positions, because suddenly Solly March popped up to begin with as right wing back, which we hadn't seen up until that point. So it's pretty difficult to know, but I'm sure he will have a plan in mind for going to Newcastle.
And just finally then, Andy, a prediction for the game. Obviously, it's Newcastle v Brighton at St James's Park, 5:30 kickoff. What do you think of this game?
Well, I'm talking to you very close to a fence outside Shoreham Airport, and I'm going to sit on it, and I'm going to call it as a 1-1 draw.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Andy. That was Andy Naylor, Brighton reporter for The Athletic. A good job it's not a wooden fence, or else Andy might be getting some splinters sitting on that fence, going for a 1-1 draw. But many thanks to Andy for joining us this afternoon. It's been a bit of a stop-start season because they had that fantastic result away at Watford on the opening weekend, 3-0 away from home, and things were looking so good for them. And it's just tailed off a little bit, so it feels like a massive game. Andy said it shouldn't be like that at this stage of the season, but for both Newcastle and Brighton, I think we'll learn a lot from both these sides across those 90 minutes. So that's Brighton v Newcastle.
This is Love Sport.
Brilliant at taking it on his back foot. Some of the assists that he's done throughout last season. He was up and down. His performances were up and down. But I've seen enough to think this guy is the real deal. And he started this season magnificently. I think he's top of chances created in the whole of England. I think it's Europe. I think he's created about 112 chances now, which was in front of even Eden Hazard last season. So you can sort of see the quality he's got. Some of his assists already this season. He's assisted Vardy two or three times. He's definitely the real deal.
Who was former Leicester winger Matt Piper talking about there? Yes, it was James Maddison, who's been in pretty good form for Leicester at the start of this season, continuing where he left off from last season. Let's see whether our next guest has a similar type of view to a former Leicester winger. I'm delighted to say that Jamie Thorpe from the First for LCFC podcast joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Jamie. Are you in full accordance with Matt Piper that James Maddison is a really, really top player, even at this moment in time?
Yeah, afternoon, mate. Yeah, I completely agree with him. He's really hit the ground running last year when he came in. 20-odd million was a fair amount of money to pay for someone out of the Championship. But yeah, he immediately showed why we spent the money on him. The way that he can sort of pick the ball up in those half spaces and get defenders and midfielders turning was something that we've really lacked in the last few years, and someone to play and link up well with Vardy. And I think that particular partnership has been one of the reasons why he's been so successful. His sort of the weight of the pass and finding those runs that Vardy's made. It was one of the big reasons why we sort of kicked on in the back end of last season. And he even shone under Puel, which says a lot, because the style of football was very, very poor. But he was the sort of the shining light in what was quite a dismal season at the start. So yeah, I can see why he's been linked with the big teams already. But I really hope that he's the sort of player that we hold on to for a while and build a team around.
In his press conference yesterday, Leicester manager Brendan Rodgers said obviously the club were committed to keeping him and wanted him to stay because, as you mentioned, he's an intrinsic part of this Leicester side, but said that it'd be difficult for the club if a Manchester United, if a Liverpool or Tottenham were to come in with big, big money, meeting their valuation, then Leicester wouldn't stop him. Are you concerned by that, or is that just a realistic view that if a club are willing to pay, let's say, £70-80 million for Maddison and met Leicester's valuation, then you'd be absolutely fine with him moving on to someone else?
Yeah, I think it'd be very similar to the whole Maguire saga. I think the club were realistic and said, look, I can see, look, if you want Champions League football, we understand that, but the money needs to be right. In my view, I'm not sure that in the current market, I know it's an outstanding amount of money, but I'm not sure 80 million would be Leicester's valuation. I think they'd probably be looking for more. And if a club was willing to be coming in and paying those sort of astronomic figures, there's not really much as a club you can say, because all that you do there is possibly alienate a player. And I think we saw that with Mahrez at times. When he was happy and he was firing, he was an absolutely outstanding player. But then when we did stand in his way and didn't allow him to go for a fee which he thought was reasonable, he down tools, and there's no point in having a player like that at the club. So I think it's a pragmatic approach. I think we're being realistic about where we are in the footballing pyramid. But if we want to try and break the incumbent sort of top six, top four, then these are the sort of players you need to hold on to for more than a couple of years.
Looking back at last weekend's game, Jamie, Leicester travelled to Manchester United, who do have quite a lot of injuries, and I was one of many actually that thought Leicester could even get a win up there. It ended up being a 1-0 win to Manchester United. Did you think, was there an element of a little bit of complacency that Leicester thought that actually this is a really good opportunity to fell a side like Manchester United in the situation they're in at the moment? Or was it one of those days where things just didn't click and you just move on from it and say, well, it is a top six side and it's away from home and that's that?
Yeah, look, I think the fact that we were disappointed with not picking up at least a draw away at Old Trafford shows how far we've come and sort of how far Man United have fallen in a lot of ways. But I actually think that we showed them too much respect. We played two holding midfielders with Chowdhury and Ndidi, and we didn't really play on the front foot like I hoped we would. I thought if we took the game to them, especially as you mentioned, with the injuries they have, there was a real chance for us to stamp our authority and get a good result out of the game. But I thought we were a bit cautious. We tried to play stop them playing rather than playing our own game. So that's where the disappointment came from. It was more the performance rather than the result. I wanted to see us go up there and give a really good account of ourselves and send a good message. But sadly, like you said, it didn't really click on the day and we've come away empty-handed.
A man that is in terrific form at the moment, Jamie, is a man that shares your first name. Jamie Vardy has scored 31 Premier League goals against sides from the established top six since August 2014, more than any other player. Why is it that Vardy relishes playing against the top six and usually thrives in these types of games?
I think it is because he is just a generally top quality player. He is one of those that he scored very consistently for the last three or four seasons in what has been a sort of a mid-table team, realistically, apart from that one-off miracle season. So the fact that he's done so in that side shows that he's got that quality. He also absolutely, he's the sort of player that relishes a big occasion. It does tend to be that if he gets stick from opposition fans, there's a goal coming. He's that sort of player. But the way that his movement and his harrying of opposition defenders, I don't think there are many players that have that sort of style. So he's got that bit of unknown quantity about him. But he's a top quality player, doesn't seem to be slowing down, crucially. So I'd like to think that he's got another two good years at Leicester in him. But it does tend to be that if he doesn't score, that we struggle. And that is only the real question mark around him, is that if he's not playing well, we haven't really got anyone that can fill that void, really.
Looking ahead then to tomorrow's game, it's a home game, 12:30 kickoff against Tottenham, who are obviously involved in Europe all the way over in Greece on Wednesday night, throwing away a two-goal lead and drawing 2-2. Tottenham have won 4 of the last 5 games against Leicester, including each of the last 3. Will Leicester be looking at this and thinking, taking advantage of what could be some tired legs, that it could be a bit of a leggy performance from Tottenham, or do you think they'll be warned, having lost it against Manchester United last weekend, that it isn't easy and you need to properly turn up if you're going to have a chance of turning over a top six side?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said. I think Tottenham are still a very good team. Modern football being the way that it is, I'm not sure that these midweek trips have as much of an impact as they used to. Obviously, there will be an element of fatigue in the squad, but they've got a good team and some real top quality players, and especially obviously with their front men. So you have to be at your best if you are going to be a top six side. And I think, but the thing is, I think if we are and we do perform like I know we can, then we've got a really good chance. And this presents one of the best chances to beat Spurs that we will have had in a little while.
One man that's expected to be available this week is Ben Chilwell. He's had a minor fitness issue this week. He's missed a few games this season. How crucial is he to this Leicester side? I rate him very, very highly. I think he's, by quite some way now, actually, England's best left back. How good a player is Ben Chilwell in your view?
Yeah, it's been really good to see him come through the ranks. He's blooded first a couple of years ago, but then the rate of his development has been rapid. And it's been really, really good to see him play for England. And I agree, I think he is probably England's best choice left back. He's a dynamic player. He's got really good legs in getting up and down the pitch, and with the sort of the attacking fullback that Rodgers likes to play, is crucial to the system. But I will say that I've been really impressed with Christian Fuchs when he's had to step in Chilwell's absence. He's only played a couple of games, but he's been absolutely outstanding. So it's good to know that we've got the backup. But Chilwell's definitely an important player, and he's one of a young core that seems to have a good relationship and are hopefully, as we mentioned before, hopefully the foundation that we build upon.
Finally, then, Jamie, let's get a prediction from you. King Power Stadium, 12:30 kickoff. Will Leicester get back to winning ways tomorrow?
Well, you've got to be optimistic, haven't you? I'd like to think that we can win. I don't think that we'll keep a clean sheet, so my prediction would be 2-1 to Leicester with Vardy getting both.
Well, you'd be delighted to know, Jamie, that's exactly what I put on my predictions, a 2-1 win for Leicester. So thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jamie. That was Jamie Thorpe from First for LCFC podcast, giving his views. He believes Tottenham will still put in an impressive display, that perhaps the midweek games aren't necessarily, or don't have as necessarily have as much impact as they used to playing on a weekend. But Tottenham tends to not have a great record after European games in midweek. Tottenham do have a very good recent record against Leicester, as I said, won 4 of the last 5, including the last 3. They had a very impressive display at the King Power. Heung-min Son was a star on that night, so it won't be an easy game at all for Leicester. That's a 12:30 kickoff, the first game of tomorrow's action. So that's Leicester versus Tottenham. We'll be turning our attention, obviously, back to the Premier League, and up next, we'll be talking all things Everton.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Loughborough Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. As I was mentioning just a few moments ago, the Rugby World Cup for 2019 is officially underway, and Japan, the hosts, have got it off in a pretty good style. A bonus point win against Russia in Pool A by 30 points to 10. A great way for the hosts to get underway. We're going to be continuing to look ahead to the Premier League action. It all gets underway tonight on the South Coast, where Southampton take on Bournemouth at the St Mary's Stadium. We've been talking about Brighton and Leicester, in this hour so far. And now we're going to turn our attention up to Merseyside and talk all things Everton. And I'm delighted to say that joining us this afternoon is Tony Scott, Everton matchday digital reporter for the Liverpool Echo. Good afternoon, Tony. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's look back at last weekend's game on the Super Sunday, a 3-1 loss away at Bournemouth. Everton's away problems continuing. How did you assess last Sunday's defeat at Bournemouth?
I didn't expect that, to be honest. I did tip Everton to win that one, because I just thought, after what happened against Aston Villa and Crystal Palace, that the ads have to get out this rut away from home sooner than later. And no Everton expected that performance, to be honest. They had the chance to go into the top four, and it just didn't materialise. I don't know what the answer is, to be perfectly honest with you. They've had a lot of different personnel over the past couple of years. Different managers have came in: Ronald Koeman, Sam Allardyce, Roberto Martinez, and David Unsworth, and now Marco Silva. And the away form just hasn't seemed to be improved one bit. And they've signed different players from big clubs, different personnel, and there's no answer. I think something has to change drastically in order to get Everton into the top six. The home form's exceptional, but the away form is abysmal. That's something that they need to address sooner rather than later.
One of the big decisions, Tony, that Marco Silva made in that game was to not start Moise Kean, who was obviously one of the big summer signings, and started Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Now, Calvert-Lewin did score Everton's only goal on Sunday, but were you very surprised, having invested quite heavily? Granted, Moise Kean is still a very young player, very inexperienced, but are you surprised with the money that Everton have invested that in a game like that, that Calvert-Lewin got the start ahead of him?
No, I did tip Dominic Calvert-Lewin to start that match, in fact, and I just thought with the way Bournemouth play, I think Everton were looking to press Bournemouth's defence, and Moise Kean isn't that type of player. He's a goal poacher, he's got pace, he's got everything, but he doesn't seem to be pressing. He strikes me over like a Michael Owen type of player. He's nippy around the box and he can get you a couple of goals, but in terms of pressing the way Everton wants to do that, I think it'll be horses for courses in terms of Moise Kean this season. He can't start every game. He's a young player, he spent a few quid on him, and he's not going to start every game. So I think Calvert-Lewin was the one that was starting for me, and he did, and he's done quite well. He gets some harsh criticism from the Calvert-Lewin from Everton supporters, and I think it's unjustified, to be honest. He's a young lad, still learning his trade, exactly, and there's not many young players his age that's leading the line for, so it's safe to see, like a top seven, top eight club. So I think it's unjustified what Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the stick that he's getting from the Everton supporters. So no, that didn't surprise me. That some of the Calvert-Lewin obviously took the mantle of leading the line for Everton, and he scores a fantastic header there. If Harry Kane would have scored it, or Sergio Aguero, we'd all be waxing lyrical about it. So yeah, some of the Calvert-Lewin was well justified with that start.
Everton have conceded 7 goals in their past 3 league games, as many as they had in their previous 13 Premier League fixtures. Why do you think, Tony, we've seen kind of that massive difference that Everton have conceded 7 in the last 13, and suddenly in the last 3, they're averaging conceding slightly more than 2 goals a game? Why has there been that change in the defensive record?
I literally couldn't tell you, to be honest. Everton were so solid at the start of the season, clean sheets against Watford and Crystal Palace. And before you know it, it's just turned to a defence which just looks as if it's making goals left, right and centre. I literally couldn't put my finger on it. I don't think Marco Silva can, because the defence has been fantastic over the past couple of months. I'd say towards the back end of last season, in terms of the start of this season, it's been fantastic in terms of clean sheets, especially at Goodison Park. But away from home, over the last couple of games, it seems to have dipped. I seriously can't put my finger on it, and I'd have to improve for the visit of Sheffield United tomorrow.
As you've preempted, Tony, the next game for Everton is at home against Sheffield United. You mentioned how Everton's home form has been pretty good over the last 6 to 12 months. Do you think that it is getting a bit of a problem for Everton that at home, with home comforts, they just seem to be so comfortable, but the moment that it's an away game, kind of psychologically, do you think Everton have kind of lost games or dropped points just by the fact that they are playing away from home?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And what's happening now, because the away form is so poor, there's heavy reliance on the home form, and you can't do that because you can't win every single game at home. I know Manchester City and Liverpool are doing likewise, but I think they're in the league of their own. So in terms of the other 18 teams, you can't be relying on your home form every single, obviously, home match. So I think it'll come unstuck one day. I think Everton will lose their home game because the home form has been fantastic. You've seen some of the big clubs you did beat last season, beat Chelsea, Manchester United, Arsenal. And Liverpool obviously came and got a 0-0 draw, which obviously Evertonians would be happy that they stopped their arch rivals from winning the league. But in terms of what they've done at Goodison Park over the space of the last 10 months, they've been exceptional. But as I just said, they're relying on it too heavily at the moment because of the away form. And I do think they'll win tomorrow. I do, just because they are man-for-man better than Sheffield United. And the home form is so good. The crowd are fantastic at Goodison Park. They have been since that Merseyside derby. So yeah, I fully expect Everton to take all 3 points tomorrow.
What have you made, Tony, of Alex Iwobi's starts to life at Everton? Obviously a big money move, a huge amount of money that Everton invested, £35 million rumoured from Arsenal. What have you made of his starts to life on Merseyside?
Yeah, he's done quite well. Chipped in with a couple of goals in the league against Wolves and in the Carabao Cup against Lincoln. He's got off to a flyer, to be honest. I think he's taken the place of Bernardo on the left-hand side, the little Brazilian. And I think what Marco Silva wants is the type of player that's more agile than Bernard. And I think Alex Iwobi ticks that box. He's powerful, he's strong, he's direct. And I think that's what Everton have got on one wing in Richarlison. And they're looking for Alex Iwobi on the other. And don't forget, Alex Iwobi, I wouldn't be surprised if he takes a number 10 spot tomorrow. I think Marco Silva will and make some changes. Whether he addresses the formation remains to be seen, but I think Alex Iwobi, a little bit of a fan's favourite so far. He puts his foot in, he's agile, he's direct, and he puts a shift in, and that's all you can ask for, isn't it?
And just finally then, Tony, you said how you were pretty confident that at home Everton will beat Sheffield United. What sort of things do Everton need to be wary of? What could prevent them from getting all 3 points?
Well, to be honest, Sheffield United have scored in 7 consecutive away fixtures, so they do like to attack. I think if Sheffield United have got any kind of joy from Everton, it'll be from set pieces. Over the last couple of weeks, Everton have looked shaky from corners and free kicks into the box. So if Sheffield United get any joy, I fully expect it to be from a corner or a set piece. But I think Everton are just too strong at Goodison Park. They have Richarlison, Iwobi, Sigurdsson. I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin will start. They've got Moise Kean on the bench, Bernard. I know Andre Gomez has just been ruled out for a rib injury. That's from the Marco Silva press conference today. So I think Everton will have strength in depth just to see off Sheffield United. As I said, the home form is fantastic and I expect that to continue.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tony. That was Tony Scott, Everton Matchday digital reporter for the Liverpool Echo, giving his views on Everton, their away form. Their bad away form continued last weekend. They are back at home at Goodison Park, though, tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock kickoff against newly promoted Sheffield United.
This is Love Sport.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.